Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the All Cargo Logistics Limited Q1 FY24 earnings conference call hosted by B&K Securities. This conference call may contain forward-looking statements about the company, which are based on the beliefs, opinions, and expectations of the company as on date of this call. These statements are not the guarantees of future performance and involve risks and uncertainties that are difficult to predict. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star and then zero on your touch-tone telephone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand over the conference to Mr. Sailesh Raja from B&K Securities. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Yeah, thank you, Jay. Good afternoon, everyone. On behalf of B&K Securities, I welcome you all to 1Q FY24 earnings conference call of All Cargo Logistics Limited. We are pleased to have with us our management team represented by Mr. Ravi Jhakar, Group Chief Strategy Officer, and Mr. Dipal Shah, Group CFO. We have opening remarks from the management, followed by Q&A session. Thank you, and over to you, Mr. Ravi.
Yeah, thank you, Sailesh. Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining in for the call. It is our privilege to be talking about our company's quarterly performance, and thank you all for attending in. The quarter gone by from April to June 2023 has been filled with significant headwinds on the international trade, and that has led to what we would term as a disappointing quarter. There is optimism as we look ahead, and at the same time, we do not still foresee the sharp rebound in the trade that economists were expecting until a few months ago, and we were also expecting for a normalized second half of 2023, which is July to December. However, the volumes continue to remain under pressure, and that's the overall sentiment on the international supply chain business, which is the flagship business. I'll try to share key commentary on all the businesses and then hand over to my colleague, Dipal. We have also tried to incorporate all the comments and inputs that we receive from our shareholders and the research analysts in trying to provide additional information. So I would also request you all to look at the investor presentation, which has been shared, which captures more details this time. For an instance, we have provided the breakup of industry segments in the contract logistics business to provide a better clarity. We have also shared more financial details about the segment, which is now important, being 100% owned by us as compared to being a joint venture in the past. We have also shared the gross profit information for international supply chain, as was sought by many participants in the last call, and we have included further such details, which can help you understand the performance of the company in a better way. Starting with the contract logistics business, this is a business which has continued to perform well on the back of a strong macroeconomic environment in the Indian context, which has continued to see good consumption and demand, formalization of warehousing sector, and our strong presence in chemical industry, on the back of which we have been able to also enter significantly in the e-commerce, auto, and a few other segments over the last 7 years since we entered into this business. Quarter-on-quarter, year-on-year, the business has continued to demonstrate robust performance, and for this quarter as well, we have seen the similar trend, and we also foresee continued strong performance considering the pipeline in terms of orders in hand and the ones we are competing for, and we believe that this business would continue to perform well in the near term and the long term. On the express business, wherein we had also acquired additional 30% shareholding from our Japanese partners, in that business, we see two significant trends. One, on the operational front, now it's been more than five, 6 months that we have seen consistent high operating parameters being delivered by the company in line with the best in the industry. And that is a reassurance of operational capabilities of the business. That is also reflecting in the increasing revenue in the business. And we have also, considering that Gati is separately listed, we have also shared more details on Gati in the earlier earnings call on Gati. So I would not get into much detail, but even the volume data shared for the month of July indicates continued momentum on the revenue. With the improved operating performance and more revenue coming in, we believe that we are in the right direction to improve the performance of the company, both on top line as well as in terms of improvement in the margin. As of today, with the acquisition of 30% having been completed in the month of June, effectively, AllCargo Logistics owns approximately 65% of this express business, 30% directly through the Gati Express supply chain, which is the company which was earlier called Gati Kintetsu Express, and 35% through 50% holding in Gati, which holds the remaining 70%. So effectively, AllCargo Logistics holds 65% of this business. On the contract logistics, again, with the transaction consummated, now we own 100% of the business. However, since the transaction was completed midway during the quarter, we still have not consolidated the numbers into the consolidated performance. And therefore, in the investor presentation, we have provided a combined view. While the consolidated numbers may look slightly different, since the consolidation from an accounting standpoint was only done for the 1 month. Going forward, with all the acquisitions and the shareholding transfers completed, we would see the consolidated numbers and come as the right numbers. There's no need to provide the additional combined numbers. Coming to the flagship business, which is again 100% owned by us, operating in India under AllCargo Logistics and operating worldwide under different subsidiaries, which are all subsidiaries of AllCargo Belgium, which is a 100% subsidiary. In that business, in the best of the times, when the global trade was booming, with inventory levels being at all-time high, warehouses being filled, in that kind of an environment, we were seeing extremely robust performance with a quarterly EBITDA crossing 300 crores on a quarterly basis. As a headline statement, I would say that with the weakening of global trade, with all the other headwind impacts, we still estimated that we should still be able to perform and be able to manage cost and gross profits in a manner whereby we should be perhaps looking at 180 to 200 crores kind of a quarterly EBITDA. However, clearly, beyond the macroeconomic forecast being wrong, I believe, and let me admit that our own anticipation and expectations on the impact on the performance of the competitive pressures and the weakening volumes has been, not turned out to be correct, and which is why we see a much weaker quarter than what we would have liked to see in the April to June quarter gone by. Primarily, there are two factors driving this. So on one hand, the macroeconomic environment means lower volume and higher competitive intensity, with everyone competing for that. That is a parameter on which we are performing well. If I look at the top 20 countries where we operate, in 18 or 19 countries, out of those 20, we have gained market share, with only one exception wherein we have lost about a 1.5% market share. So we have continued to outperform the competition in terms of being able to do more business. But there has also been a competitive pressure on the pricing. And with the utilization numbers remaining low, in terms of the container utilization, what we were doing about 12 months ago, today, each container is perhaps 8 to 10% lesser filled, as you can again see from the container utilization index we have shared. So the combination of all these factors the gross profit has been impacted. So one could see that the gross profit which we have shared this time on a year-on-year basis is down approximately 19%, while we would have anticipated it to be down lower in terms of rupees per cubic meter earned on the LCL business. We would have endeavored to keep it constant, but that has also dropped by about 6 to 7%. And these impacts on the gross profit, when translate into EBITDA impact, they get more pronounced with the scale impact. The other highlight to look at this is also there have been some specific countries where we are focusing on, and I would say if you look at, like I said, potentially in our estimation, with all the adverse headwinds, with all the challenges, we would have still liked to do perhaps 65-70 crores more than what has been delivered in the international supply chain segment. And if you look at it, possibly half of that gap can be accounted to one single country, United States of America, where we have seen a significantly weak performance, and we are working on improving there. If I combine Europe and Americas, these two regions, which represent largely the long-haul trade also, with a lot of trade happening between Asia to these destinations, and also the more developed Western economies, which have been under more severe pressure in terms of trade flows. What we observe is that these countries put together, the Europe and Americas, were a year ago, if you look at the first half of 2022 calendar year, they were contributing to perhaps almost anywhere in the range of 40% to 50% of the EBITDA for international supply chain, while that contribution in the first half of this year, January to June, is perhaps in the range of 10% to 15%. There's been a significant impact in these two regions. And in terms of mitigating these factors, we are doing multiple things. One, we remain focused on the volumes, and which is why, despite weak environment, there is published data available from various forwarders and shipping lines listed on international exchanges talking about 8%, 9%, 10% kind of decline in volumes. We know from our competitive landscape that we estimate our competing LCL consolidators to have lost volume to the degree of maybe 14% to 15%. In comparison to that, we have been able to increase market share and thereby perform better in volume terms. We foresee a similar trend in the month of July as well, where we should be able to win on volumes, and we should be able to share July data in the next 3 to 5 days. So we are able to hold on to volumes, and this means that the expanded market share should help us when the market environment improves. We should be able to grow volumes, and you know, as volume grows, hopefully that would mean better container utilizations, and therefore that's one plan we have in terms of staying focused on volume and market share to improve performance as the macroeconomic environment improves. The second aspect we've been focusing on is now looking at the cost line items more closely, expediting some of the initiatives which could be either around automating certain mundane processes, or it could be about executing the outcome of some of the transformation programs we've been running, which now have standardized the process and therefore allow us to move certain positions from high-cost countries into lower-cost countries to reduce the cost. So on one hand, we are trying to stay focused on volumes and market share. On the other hand, we are now more consciously looking at the cost as well, with an endeavor to get back to the EBITDA levels that we believe would be sustainable in adverse situations. And as and when the global macroeconomic environment improves, we should be able to further gain. On the FCL side, the market again has been weaker, and that has prevented us from exhibiting the growth rate that we have seen over the last 7-8 years on a sustained basis of 20%. The volumes on FCL are also flat. In the FCL business, we have always spoken about decline in yield with the freight rates coming down, which has happened. But while we anticipated that to be compensated by expanding volumes, we have found expanding volumes in FCL business to be more challenging, even though our market share in FCL is minuscule. So in the FCL business, the company's strategy is to focus on select markets. We are building team capabilities in some select markets and trying to work with these focus markets to drive growth in volume. So in summary, the company's approach on the international supply chain business would be to improve performance even with the adverse conditions continuing. And should the conditions improve, we should be able to see a significant improvement. In some sense, when we look at the profitability as well as the cost, taking into account all the inflationary adjustments and the appraisals which happen in the first quarter in some countries, which run on December to Jan, and some countries in the second quarter, which are mostly effective from 1st April. This quarter of April to June essentially accounts for all cost escalations, also accounts for competitive intensity. And therefore, from an international supply chain business perspective, this is the bottom performance. And our endeavor is to improve from here, and not just hoping for better macroeconomic environment, but also with various initiatives which I highlighted. And we would also look at strengthening our own internal business forecast mechanism in a highly volatile environment, so that we can endeavor to, just like how we've been trying to provide more and more better clear information, we'll also try to provide more and more accurate forecasts on how we see the coming few quarters. So with that, I would say international supply chain business has seen its toughest times. On the other hand, on the domestic side, we continue to see favorable environment for the contract logistics and the excess logistics business. And both those businesses are heading in the right direction. Apart from these three businesses, all the other businesses of the company have already been demerged. And therefore, the business is focused on these asset-light, digitally enabled businesses. And in terms of technology advances, we are making good progress. Our data science programs have been yielding impact. If you look at the impact on network optimization for the excess logistics business, which is being done by data science today, we are also using generative AI to improve efficiencies in answering quotation emails, which allow us to gain more volumes. This is in context of the international supply chain business. So in many ways, the business performance that we see is also somewhere aided by technology. And every year to come, we believe technology to play an even important role. And considering that, we would remain focused on technology initiatives, which would drive the growth of the company in the long term. And on that note, I would request my colleague Deepal Shah to share financial highlights and talk about the financial performance of the business of the company. Deepal, over to you.
Thank you, Ravi. I will now discuss the performance for Q1 FY24. The consolidated revenue for Q1 FY24 stood at ₹3,271 crores as compared to ₹5,474 crores during the same quarter last year. The consolidated EBITDA for Q1 FY24 stood at 139 crore as compared to 360 crores for the Q1 FY23. The company reported a consolidated PAT PAT of 119 crores for Q1 FY24 as compared to 260 crore for Q1 FY23. Would like to highlight here that the company has a very comfortable debt position, with the net debt for Q1 FY24 being at a very marginal level of 12 crores. This is after acquiring 30% stake from the KWE, the Kintetsu Partners, for 406 crores. Post-transaction, we have changed the name of the company from GKPL, which was Gati Kintetsu Express Private Limited, to Gati Express and Supply Chain Private Limited. Moving on to the segmental performance, I will start by discussing the performance of the international supply chain business. As Ravi mentioned, the global trade environment continues to remain soft. The company is witnessing increased competition for incremental volumes in the market driven by muted overall demand. We intend to maintain our focus on volumes and market share. LCL volumes for the quarter one of FY24 stood at 2.2 million cubic meters as compared to 2.3 million cubic meters for the previous year quarter. Owing to our market share focus, the LCL volume witnessed a growth of 6.2% sequentially. On the FCL front, the FY24 quarter one volumes stood at 143,000 TEUs. The volumes degrew by 9% on a YOY basis. For the Q1 FY24, the international supply chain business reported a revenue of 2,823 crores as compared to 5,043 crores in Q1 FY23. The EBITDA for the same period stood at 111 crores as compared to 341 crores for the previous quarter. Moving on to the express business operating under the Gati Express Supply Chain Private Limited, continued emphasis on the best-in-class service levels and enhancing operational efficiency has culminated in a yet another strong performance for the quarter. The volumes for Q1 FY24 stood at 292,000 metric tons, representing a 5% YOY growth. For the period, the reported revenue stood at 367 crores as compared to 365 crores in the same quarter last year. Sorry, I was getting a call. Same quarter last year. The express business will launch its Bangalore hub in August and the volume momentum is expected to remain strong. Moving on to contract logistics business. As Ravi mentioned, we have consolidated for 1 month the contract logistics business because it was acquired towards the mid of the quarter. We completed our transaction and 100% of that business is now owned by All Cargo Logistics through its subsidiary AFCPL, which is All Cargo Supply Chain Private Limited. Therefore, the full impact of the contract logistics business will be clearly visible from the following quarters. Assuming 100% ownership, the entire quarter, if we were to take to account, the contract logistics revenue for Q1 FY20 would be around close to 75 crores as compared to 77 crores for the Q1 FY23. Similarly, an EBITDA for the entire quarter would be close to 32 crores as compared to 28 crores for the previous quarter last year. In line with the best disclosure practices, we have been consistently providing other key comparative financial performance and operational indicators in our investor presentation. One can refer this for more details. With this, I would like to open the floor for questions and answers. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Nirav Savai from Abacus. Please go ahead.
My question is on the MPO business. So last quarter, we had a quarterly one-off provision for about 60-odd crores. Is there something exceptional this quarter also?
No, there is no impact of any exceptionals in this quarter. There are, of course, like I mentioned, countries which require more focus, but that is a business concern. There are no one-off exceptional items per se impacting this performance.
Okay. And the second thing you said that the U.S. and Europe combined was about 40% of your EBITDA in 22. And in terms of contribution, which has come down to 10%.
First half of 22, yes.
First half of 22, which has come down to 10% for the first quarter, right?
First half of 23 again, like-to-like comparison. First half 22 versus first half 23. It was over 40% and now it is in the range of 10 to 15% is what I was highlighting. demonstrates that there's a greater concern in those markets, and which is what we are trying to address through management initiatives.
Okay, and the same thing continues for the first quarter as well, for the 24?
Yeah, so when I'm saying, I'm referring to the calendar year, so January to June 22 versus January to June 23 is what I'm referring to.
Right. So this is basically more competition intensity, or it is completely volumes which have become very weak, or what exactly is resulting in this?
This is largely a concern arising out of reduced volumes, and reduced volumes have a multiplying impact. One, these are the markets which typically have, you know, higher cost base in terms of your SG&A cost. People costs are usually higher in these markets. At the same time, profit is also higher because these are longer trade lanes. So, you know, when you're shipping something from China to Korea, the profit would be naturally much lesser as compared to shipping something from China to US or Europe. So these countries work well because they have higher profit and higher cost base. Now, the cost base remains same if the macroeconomic environment doesn't change. Rather, many of these countries which would have, you know, inflationary salary adjustments of 1%, 1.5% historically, have much higher adjustments this time, and many of these countries are even mandated by law. So the cost base continues to be high, but weakening of volumes in these trade lanes creates an impact, and which is why, you know, and that multiplier effect comes into play, because the absolute decline in gross profit translates into absolute decline in EBITDA. So in percentage terms, it becomes significant. So that is the situation, and so it's largely the decline in volumes in these markets, and these are long-haul markets, which basically impact the profitability more. And lower volumes naturally mean more competition, lesser utilization, all of those things come along with that.
Right. So we continue to see a similar kind of a demand scenario even in the July month, or you see signs of recovery?
So we have not seen the change in macroeconomic environment in July. We what we have been able to do is we have been able to continue our own you know, initiatives, which should help us further improve by 2%, 3% on a perhaps approximately on a month-on-month basis in terms of our own volume. But in terms of the overall macroeconomic environment, we still don't see any significant reversal in demand, but in terms of our own volume, you should see 2-3% to maybe about 4-4.5%. We'll release the data next week. We're still compiling it for the month of July, but there's a positive upward trend, which is primarily limited to our performance as compared to the overall environment.
Right. In terms of cost, if we see the conversion cost for MTO business around about 580 crores for the first quarter. So is there any annualized budget where we can get a sense of how this is moving on? For FY24, the entire year?
You mean to say the forecast for the remaining two quarters, three quarters?
In terms of cost, yes. So we see this.
In terms of cost, like I said, you know, the quarters from April to June, in this quarter, all the countries, some countries, you know, would have seen cost increase on annual appraisals, etc., in the first quarter of the year, which is Jan. This business operates from Jan to December for us from a business standpoint. And therefore, several countries operate on Jan to December, see appraisals in Jan to March. But countries like India see it from 1st April. But in April to June, all costs are factored in, is what I was mentioning earlier. So from a cost standpoint, consider this as all costs factored in. So from here on, as we are able to improve gross profit, that should come down to the bottom line, is what our, and that's the endeavor, to improve the gross profit so that it can be passed on to EBITDA.
Okay, so the similar cost is something which will continue as far as the rest of the year is concerned on a quarterly basis.
Yes, right, with some initiatives trying to bring it down marginally as well, which should also possibly help us maybe in a, so in about 3 to 6 month time frame, we should be able to bring about some reduction in these costs.
Okay, and lastly, on the contract logistics side, now we are almost at 95% kind of a utilization. So what kind of growth do we see in this business? And even if it's on a YOY basis, there has been a decline in revenue. So how do we see this business for the next 2-3 years kind of a time frame?
Yeah, so in this business, the YOY decline that you see in revenue is only on account of a certain specific kind of business, which was not profitable. It was more like a pass-through business being done with a certain client, which we have cut off, and which is why if you would notice, the EBITDA has gone up by almost 15%, the gross profit has gone up by almost 25% year on year. So from a revenue standpoint, is not an indicator. The business continues to remain strong, and which is what has allowed us to grow 25% on gross profit year on year. And then in EBITDA as well, we are continuing to invest in people, and also in this business, it's not like a fixed capacity. So the capacity is very flexible. We keep on taking new warehouses on lease, and we continue to operate them. Sometimes we take them ahead of demand, which is what we always maintain certain white space, which is what you see about 5-6%. And in some cases, these are built to suit. So if, say, a particular customer has a specific requirement, we would take a particular warehouse on lease and then operate it to the customer's requirement. So capacity is not a constraint in that sense. We continue to develop new warehouses as an operator, and you know, take on more capacity to service more and more customers.
And the guidance of, you know, on the express business, 3,000 crores kind of for revenue by FY26 is intact. Is it purely organic, or would also involve any acquisitions?
So I would refrain getting into the details of Gati business, since, you know, it's also separately listed, and therefore for the benefit of Gati shareholders, we tend to respond to most Gati questions in the Gati earnings call.
All right. That's it from us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Participants who wish to ask a question may press star and one. The next question is from the line of Riya Mehta from Equitas Investments. Please go ahead.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity. My first question is in regards with the debt level. So is this post our acquisition of the contract logistics business? Hello?
Sorry if I understood. You're asking about the debt.
I think what she's asking is that, is this debt level post the acquisition of contract logistics? That's correct. It is, the contract logistics was acquired through internal accruals. So this current debt is post acquisition of contract logistics business and the acquisition of the Kintetsu stake in Gati subsidiary.
Got it. In terms of when we talk about contract logistics, you said that the capacity utilization has not been a constraint. However, we're seeing increasing competition over in that space. What is your outlook there, and what kind of margins do we see in this business to sustain?
So in this business, you know, like I was mentioning earlier as well, this is a business in which we have seen robust performance and good growth, you know, over the years. And in the chemical contract logistics, we are the market leaders in the country. But in the e-commerce, we have started only in the last few years and done well. We entered into auto segment and we have done well. There are many other sectors also for us to explore. So from our point of view, we are at an optimal scale and size to, you know, leverage benefits. But at the same time, we have a significant headroom for growth. So growth is not limited by competition, and we are able to find enough opportunities in the market where we are able to provide the right solutions at the right price. Customers are willing to engage into contracts, and so from that standpoint, and capacity is more like, you know, is the number in capacity is basically how much of the warehouse is utilized, and typically we always maintain 5-7% white space for an optimal, you know, capacity forecasting, and based on which warehouses are taken on lease. So that's a part of the business, and we have been facing almost a similar set of competitors over the years, and the business has performed well, and we estimate it to continue to do well.
And in terms of margins for the business?
So in terms of the margins, I would say on a percentage terms, as we grow, the percentage margin could be slightly lower, because historically this business was, you know, at one point in time, almost 90% chemical contract logistics, which has been growing, but it has been coming down because the other businesses are growing much faster because they were starting from a zero base. Now, chemical contract logistics is highly specialized and therefore is higher margin. So you see this as a combination of contract logistics for chemical clients and other clients. Chemical logistics is also growing well, which is higher margin. But as the other businesses grow more, percentage margins should see a downward trend, but overall margin should continue to improve.
What would be a sectoral breakup for the current quarter?
Yeah. So we have shared the sectoral breakup in the presentation as well. Approximately 35% to 40% revenue comes from chemicals, food and pharma. About the same number, slightly lower from e-commerce. And about 18-20% comes from auto and industrial.
Earlier, what was the trend so as to gauge what kind of direction?
So like I said, we started off as a chemical contract logistics. The other businesses have been incubated over last few years. So at one point in time, it was almost 80-90%.
Plus, that was which year? Around, if I could just have a sense.
2016. We started in 2016 as a JV.
Okay.
For the chemical.
And in terms of LCL, where I think it's a higher margin business for us, are we seeing more? We've acquired a lot of... Hello?
Yeah, we can hear you.
We had acquired a lot of companies lately in last year around, so we've increased our market share. So what kind of outlook do you give on the LCL basis on, say, a year from now or something? Despite macroeconomic scenario being weak or current levels?
Yeah, so in the LCL business, we have acquired one company in the last 18 months or so. Prior to that, we had acquired Nodicon, which was in the year 2021. And what we have done is a follow-on transaction in that. We already own 65% and we have acquired additional 25% recently. So that's the same company. It's not a new business. It was already part of the business. The new company which you acquired this year was in the month of January, which is a company called Fairtrade in Germany. For this business, we have seen a volume contribution. However, the business is still not contributing on the bottom line. So there's been some marginal volume contribution which you have highlighted of the degree of about 1-1.5% on the margin side. We anticipate that the business will take some more time before it can start turning positive on profits, considering that it was, you know, a competing network that we acquired. So it had to incur loss of certain business immediately, while the network synergies would only kick in over a period of time. So we estimate that business to move from marginal losses, these are not significant losses, to break even over the next 3 to 4 months. Then the overall scheme of things, impact of about 1.5% or so on volume, almost no impact on bottom line.
Got it. And in terms of our trade lanes, like you said, UK and US form, or the loss of EBITDA would form almost 50% would come from UK and US trade lanes. Could you guide us what are the trade lanes which would impact us more than 10%?
Yeah, so let me also clarify. I did not say UK and US. I said Europe and Americas. When we say Americas, it includes US, Canada, and Central America, which is Mexico, and Latin American countries such as Peru, Chile, Argentina, Brazil, etc. On the European, we're talking about everything from Scandinavia, which is Denmark, Finland, Norway, to Poland on the east, UK, Belgium, Germany in the north, Spain, France, Italy. So I'm talking about the whole of Europe and Americas, which is what I referred to. Overall, we have 2,500 trade lanes that we operate, and there is no single trade lane which accounts for 10% of the business.
Okay. And India would form how much of part of our trade lane, which includes India's counterpart?
So India itself would have multiple trade lanes across the world, but India as a country would say roughly be about 10-12% of the business.
10-12%. And in terms of sectoral breakup in terms of kind of volumes in the LCL business, what kind of sector would contribute the largest?
So we are almost sector agnostic in this. This is a truly representative of global trade. Therefore, there's no sectoral dependence per se. But naturally, LCL business caters to generally, you know, cargo which is in smaller size, which doesn't go in like multiple full container loads. So typically these are mostly small and medium businesses, some degree of, you know, e-commerce back-end supplies, or certain businesses, you know, ranging from furniture to textiles to consumer electronics. This is almost quite varied. But you could say there will be general bias towards smaller businesses. So you would find more share of LCR among these smaller businesses as compared to, say, if you're looking at large Walmart contracts, they would mostly be skewed towards FCL. But in terms of the sectoral split, there's no specific sectoral split per se.
Because lately we've been seeing comeback of textiles and all those companies, so just getting a sense there, how much would textile form as a percentage of our total?
Yeah, so like I said, no, that will be relevant to, say, India, and India is 10%, and perhaps maybe textile could be, again, a certain percentage of that 10%. And as such, we have been noticing that since the Indian economy has been doing well, and except for the recent months wherein you would have suddenly taken note of India's exports also declining significantly, driven by lack of demand in the Western economies, but otherwise still on a comparative basis, whether we compare to other manufacturing countries such as China, India has sustained the performance much better. And we believe that India should lead the curve in terms of growth as well.
Okay, thank you. That's it from my side.
Thank you.
Before we take the next question, we would like to remind participants that you may press star and one to ask a question. The next question is from the line of Uday Prakash from Value Research India Private Limited. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. I just have a few questions from my side. Since the launch of EQ 360 in 2018 at that time, it has grown significantly over the years. They have added more and more features. Now, can you let me know how much revenue do we derive from EQ 360 as a percentage of total revenue? Let's say 2-3 years ago.
Yeah, so I can share with you that when it comes to export bookings, which is a good indicator of revenue being booked by the company on a global basis, in 2000 or say pre-pandemic 2019, there was a single digit number, about 7 to 8% of the bookings which were happening digitally. Today, with the launch of platform capabilities, we have almost, as of today, will be somewhere in the range of 66 to 67% of the global export bookings happen digitally, which could be either somebody logging into EQ360 or even directly an API and or EDI interchange between our systems and the client systems. So sometimes they are directly connected to EQ360 by way of an API, so they don't even need to log into EQ360. They can operate in their own ecosystem while being supported by EQ360 in the backend. So digital bookings have moved from about 8%, 7-8% to about 66-67% on the global exports.
Oh, okay, sir. My second question is on contract logistics. Now, since we are the leader in chemical contract logistics and we have developed a certain expertise in that area and we have now entered into auto also, do we already have or do we plan to have any long-term contracts with bigger companies so that we are the ones who handle their goods constantly? Is there something like that or we do it on a contract-to-contract basis only for any company that comes to us?
Yeah, so, that is the advantage in contract logistics business, that it is not a transactional business. So unlike an express logistics business where a customer is booking one shipment from origin to destination, or even in international supply chain and somebody is booking one cubic meter or one container of cargo, contract logistics business by nature is usually more longer term contracts, which could, vary from 12-month contracts to some of them could be 5-year contracts as well. These are typically long-term contracts awarded by the companies for managing their entire inventory in that particular warehouse. So these are by nature not transactional but long-term contracts.
Okay, so adding a major company to our client portfolio would be kind of a breakthrough for this entire segment itself.
Almost all the key companies, I would say, majority of, so if you look at the chemical segment, almost all the top companies operate with us. In the other segments we're getting in, e-commerce, we look at almost all the top companies. So in the segments that we operate in, almost all the key top companies already work with us. So we have demonstrated our performance, and which is why most of them are also repeat customers, signing multiple contracts across different locations.
And so can the same can be done for FCL business also? I mean, FCL is kind of like a big player logistic business only in the shipping. So can we develop a partnership with particular set of companies that are focused on exports? and cater to them. Would that reduce the volatility in volume that we face from time to time due to slowdown and all? Or do we already have it in place?
Yeah, so you know, let me explain. When we see a slowdown, that slowdown would happen at all levels. So you know, shippers will see their volumes going up and down in terms of volatility. So that volatility would still remain for a company. Where we position ourselves is we operate as a non-vessel owning common carrier. What that means in easy terms is like, you know, Uber of shipping. So we operate like a shipping line which doesn't own ships, and which is where we are able to, you know, operate in an asset-light manner. But we are mostly working with forwarders as our customers. These forwarders could be large forwarders such as DHL, Kuehne Nagel. These forwarders could be smaller forwarders. And these are generally long-term relationships, but these are not long-term contracts. In contract logistics, contractually, the business is signed for a long term. In this case, while the business is transactional, customers are booking one shipment at a time. But if you look at the relationship, that goes back long. So if you look at our relationship on the vendor side, which is shipping lines, we have been working with almost all the top shipping lines for 20, 30 years. If you look at our top customers, almost all the customer relationships also go back into several decades. So these are good, strong relationships built over a long period of time. And but at the same time, the business is transactional. It is very similar to express logistics, wherein auto company or a textile company would be making bookings for a particular transaction, but they would tend to operate with two or three players who they trust most for service and pricing, and therefore there's a long-term relationship. That's a similar situation in LPL also.
And if my understanding is correct, if a big player, let's say a player that is exporting in thousands and thousands of crores, they would rather partnership with a shipper directly, I assume, rather than an intermediary like us, which is usually preferred by some of medium to smaller size players.
Yeah, so see, it is typically very clear if there is someone who wants to ship 500 containers, you know, or 1,500 containers every week from Shanghai to Los Angeles, they would not need an intermediary. They would reach out to the shipping lines directly and run a tender. If somebody is operating 5 cubic meters of cargo, shipping line would not be able to accept it. They would need the full container. They, while shipping lines do operate LCL, they've not been very, they've not been able to gain much market share. So they would need a consolidator such as ourselves, because we have built this network over a period of time. And as you can see from our own financial performance, even 3 to 4% impact on utilization can, you know, have a huge impact. It's almost like, you know, in some sense, a high utilization business. Therefore, replicating this network is almost impossible. And which is why you don't find new competition coming in. The market has been seeing consolidation within the existing players on a global basis. So the capability would be not about getting large contracts. Business by nature is about working with multiple forwarders. So for an example, more than 20,000 forwarders log into EQ360 work with us on the platform. So that's the kind of scale we are operating at, with more than 2,500 trade lanes right now. So that's the kind of competitive advantage as compared to one large contract or one big relationship.
Okay, sir. Now, the disadvantage that we have, also FCL is a very prosperous business, but since we are at a very nascent stage and the disadvantage it has over LCL is that LCL, in the nature of the business itself, there is a direct cost pass-through. But here, if the container utilization is not up to the mark, then we would have to bear that cost, if I'm not wrong.
No, so LCL is where, you know, we fill the container, and therefore the container utilization has a role to play. In FCL, it is a full container which is booked. So container, whether it is half-filled or fully filled, does not make an impact. But what happens is, unlike LCL, where there's so much of value addition, you know, customer only has 5 cubic meter or 1 cubic meter of cargo. It is, our team which will, you know, integrate, consolidate all these cargoes in a warehouse, take them into one container, do multiple transshipments if required. There'll be deconsolidation at the warehouse. So it's a much more complex operation, and therefore, due to high value addition, it is usually a higher margin business. FCL business is more transactional in nature, and therefore, when the freight rates come down, the FCL business would see, you know, the margins also come down. So that's where FCL business is more transactional, while LCL business is more complex with greater value added from our side, and hence more profitable also.
Mr. Prakash, may we request that you return to the question queue for follow-up questions, as there are several participants waiting for their turn.
Okay, sure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The next question is from the line of Kapil Malhotra from Tata Mutual Fund. Please go ahead.
Hi, Ravi. This is Kapil.
So, hi, Kapil.
So just wanted to understand, what is the utilization level in LCL business this quarter?
Yeah, so if you look at the LCL utilization, it is currently at a indexed level of about 92, which means that if you were at 100 in July 22, in June 23, we are at about 92% of that.
Okay. So what I'm trying to understand is, because obviously our EBITDA per TEU, the profitability essentially,
right,
has been volatile. And, you know, what we have discussed is that, you know, post-COVID, we have had a lot of technological advancements, cost saving activities which we have done, due to which we will be able to maintain margins. But what I see is that margins have obviously dipped, right? I do understand it has a lot to do with the utilization. That is why I have the first question. But do we have any ballpark number in which we say that, you know, this looks like a sustainable EBITDA margin for you? And also, this is the minimum utilization we need to achieve that sustainable margin. Because for me, you know, it is getting difficult to essentially gauge what will be the accurate number of the margin.
Yeah, so I would say that, you know, there are three or four factors which contribute to the margin. One, like you rightly said, is utilization. Second is how many 40-foot containers we are using. And both of these are somewhat linked with volume, because if we have more volume on trade lane, we are able to move more 40-foot containers, and we are also able to utilize the containers better. And, sorry. So these are, you know, more operational parameters. And then also about how many containers are we able to move directly versus transshipment, and what kind of value addition we are providing in terms of, you know, not just offering port to port, but door to door. So these are all the factors which contribute. In terms of, you know, sustainable numbers, I would say that very clearly what we have seen in this quarter, April, May, June, appears to be like, you know, the boat hitting the rock on the riverbed. Since all the costs have already been factored in, the volume expansion has not happened because of the macroeconomic environment. And the competitive intensity also means pressure on pricing. So all these factors are at play. So I would say that while we would need perhaps another few, maybe 6 to 9 months to arrive at a sustainable number, but we should only be looking at, you know, improving from here on.
Okay. But so as you said, the index is at 92 versus 100 last year. What ideally should be the right index for us, where we can make at least a decent
So I would say that, you know, we should definitely return to 95-96% as compared to 92 that we have today. That would be the broad estimate. And as you can see, that 3-4% increase should translate to better yields and therefore the better profitability. That would be our, that is the approach with which, you know, we are internally planning as well in terms of how can we take that to 95-96, and that means that requires volumes to come in, and which is where we've been trying to focus more on the market share expansion and getting volumes back. It would also be somewhat linked to the recovery in long haul trade lanes, because that is where the maximum profitability impact is, which is, you know, Europe to LATAM, China Europe, China America, etc., or India Europe, India Americas. So that's where the focus has been on how can we expand these trade lanes. So business initiatives are more focused on these countries, these trade lanes, you know, getting deeper into China to expand market share, trying to build better capabilities in Latin America. We've been hiring teams in Brazil and a few other countries, trying to further strengthen our base in Eastern Europe. So we've been working on various strategic initiatives which can help us grow volumes on these long-haul profitable trade lanes, and those volumes should help us also operate trade lanes with optimal utilization, which, like I said, the target internally would be to go back to at least 95-96 over the next 6 to 9 months.
But lastly, on the similar line, are we able to quantify what is the cost savings we have been able to do due to the technological advancements we have done in the last 2-3 years?
So we have, you know, some internal estimates which we have on the technology impact. These are largely The dollar impact is largely measured through increased customer stickiness. So we are trying to see patterns in which we are clearly evident that the non-EQ360 customers have lower repeat values as compared to EQ360 customers, for an example. We have also seen that the door booking percentage is clearly higher in customers who are using EQ360. And the longer they have been on EQ360, we also find the door component to be higher. So all these trends indicate that the customers are booking more often and more services, which means higher volumes and higher yields. That's one example. On the data science projects, we are seeing impact in terms of the, on the cost side. So these are some of the things that we have seen wherein we also feel that, and it's not just the impact in terms of ease of doing business, but there is also a dollar impact on top line in the international supply chain business in particular, and on the cost side in the domestic express business in particular.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Bhavya Sanghvi from Fortress Group. Please go ahead. The line of Bhavya has dropped. I think due to paucity of time, that was the last question. I will now hand the conference over to Mr. Sailesh Raja for closing remarks.
Yeah, thank you. On behalf of BNK, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may disconnect now.
Thanks. Thank you.
Thank you all. Thank you.